So we have a brand new missalette out, and it's got a nice cover on the front. It's an ancient icon. I forget exactly where from, but you can read it on the inside cover. And you look on it, and it has the image of Pentecost. So it has the 12 apostles, and it also has the image of Mary. And Mary and the apostles, in a sense, are counter images of the church. And by counter, I don't mean opposed to each other, but complementary, that you have to kind of keep them in tandem. So Mary is the image of the church in her fullness. And if you listen really closely to the church's liturgy, especially in the retranslated version of the liturgy that we have, the church is always described in the feminine, that she, the church, is made in the image of Mary, and that Mary is the forerunner of the church. Then you have the 12 apostles of the Lamb, who constitute the church in the sense like a new Israel. Because if those of you know that you have the 12 tribes of Israel are the sons of Jacob, who is, his name is actually Israel, whose father is Isaac, whose father is Abraham. So when Jesus calls the 12 apostles to himself, to the entire Jewish world, right away, they got the impression, oh, this guy means business. If he's calling 12 disciples that he gathers around himself, that what he's doing is restoring Israel. Because by the time of Jesus' mission and proclamation, the 12 tribes have been pretty much decimated, and all that's left is a few spatterings of Benjamin and pretty much Judah. The rest, gone. And so when Jesus does this, they're having, oh, things are going to get better. And of course, at the end, at this coming Sunday, when the disciples say, are you going to restore Israel? They're thinking, is this now the time? Is this the time where you're going to restore our nation? That's not quite Jesus' intention. But you can see the connection between the Jewish identity and what Jesus is intending on doing. And yet, as is always the case, Jesus' intentions are not quite understood by the apostles. Most notably, what we will get today are Philip and James. Philip is one of the first disciples, and he's the one that says, you know, how do we know the way? He's the one that brings a lot of the other disciples to Jesus, and he's a very interesting character, and one of the lovely things about the apostles is how readily the evangelist will describe them as being absolutely clueless, just completely clueless. And they have no problem with it either. You know, like one of the things that we should never tire of really meditating on is generally the founders of religious cults have no sense of humor about themselves. Absolutely none. And they'll usually want to explain away their screw-ups as being somehow of divine mandate that God told them to screw it up. And one of the better examples is when Muhammad wants to get another bride, he just says, well, God told me to have another wife and he gave me her and it's okay. Whereas when the apostles screw up, it says, we screwed up and it was by God's design, but it was for your good. This wasn't because God is, you know, giving me an excuse to be a goof. It just means that my screw-ups are also helping you. Because how many times have we read the Gospels and thought, what on earth is Jesus talking about? And we're really quite happy that the apostles, like Philip, would say, where are you going? What are you talking about? Can you speak to us plainly, please? And then Jesus, you know, he gives them the kind of, what are you talking about? But half of us are kind of thinking, whew, I'm happy he asked that for me because, you know, I don't want to have to ask him. The guy I want to talk about a bit more today, though, is James. Now, today's James is James the Less. James the Greater is the brother of John, the sons of Zebedee. And it's funny because James the Greater doesn't necessarily mean that he's more important. It actually generally means that he was bigger or the one that came first. We don't quite know. And James the Greater disappears really quickly off the scene. He's called one of the sons of thunder. He has a fiery temper. And it's assumed that he was the first to be martyred, maybe around 44 AD. James the Lesser is, in fact, by no means lesser in terms of prominence. Now, here's a problem, though. We don't actually know if James, son of Alphaeus, is one figure or two. Because it could be also James, the brother of the Lord, or a different apostle entirely. we're not entirely certain. St. Jerome is convinced that James, the brother of the Lord, is James, son of Alphaeus, and then there's others that are not entirely certain. Most modern scholars are kind of ambivalent about the question. I'm going to assume they're the same guy. What it means by brother of the Lord means the cousin of the Lord. It means that they are immediate cousins. And if anybody knows many other languages, if I remember Spanish correctly, for instance, cousin and brother are the same word. Right?
Yeah.
So they grew up together. They're close. But Jesus then doesn't make him one of his more intimate circles. But after the resurrection, James the Lesser, James the brother of the Lord, as he's called, then becomes a foundational figure for the Jerusalem church. In fact, the most foundational figure for the Jerusalem church. That although Peter is the mouthpiece, James is the administrator. James is the guy that once he says something, generally the Jerusalem church is on board. So when you read the story of the Council of Jerusalem, it goes like this. Paul gives his account for why the Gentiles don't need to be circumcised. Then Peter says, I agree, I had this experience with Cornelius and it worked out well. And then James is the one that says, we're good with this. These are the provisions. This is how it's going to go down. And people go with what James has to say. And you also see how important James is that Paul, even though he has a few disagreements with James, singles him out as an important figure, and he calls him a so-called pillar of the church. He doesn't quite like it very much, but he considers him that unless Paul and James have what he calls the hand clasp of fellowship, then all this stuff that they're doing is for naught. Because what the apostles are meant to do is to bind the church into a unity. Mary is the symbol of the church in her integrity. The apostles of the church are meant to govern and to guide the church and then to also spur her on in mission, to be able to kind of give her that outward thrust. And the reason why Paul and James have a bit of discussion and dissension is something we talked about a bit over the weekend. How do you hand on the Jewish customs? Because any one of us knows how hard it is to pass on your faith to your kids and grandkids. It's really hard to figure out what to teach, what don't you teach, what things are essential, what things are not essential. And especially when you go out to Gentiles and you're Jewish Christians, you go out to cities like Corinth and Ephesus and Antioch and all these different places, and Greek-speaking people take it for granted. This sounds really quite bad, but it must be discussed, where they don't understand that incest, wife swapping, and all sorts of bits of sexual immorality are just kind of, oh, this is what happens. They never thought too much about it. And so these Jewish people are like, oh my God, how do you teach these people? How do you instruct them to become Christians when these basics of life, these basics of the Ten Commandments are not even understood, let alone all this? So you can understand the bewilderment. And you can also understand the concern about how you hand on the faith in terms of its meaning. Because we hear passages when it just says, Jesus goes to the temple. Well, unless you know what the temple is, that doesn't make any sense to you. Unless you know, in a sense, some of the Hebrew traditions, you don't understand the meanings of the words and how these all work out. So this difficulty is actually very much paralleled to what the church has experienced in the last few decades. We go from cultural experience of Christian life that out of necessity must be transformed. But in the process of transformation, a lot is lost. An easy explanation would be the old translation of the Missal. They did it quickly, they did it expediently, but they also just expunged a whole bunch unnecessarily. And they lost a lot. And entire generations didn't learn little bits of the faith that were just kind of hidden underneath the text. And for anybody who appreciates these things, it's a tragic loss. For people that are trained in music to then have to endure bad music. For people who have an understanding of classical history and then to have priests run roughshod over it. Or to have all these different things that we understand as beautiful disregarded. Is tough to endure. And this helps us understand the role of the Spirit. There are a lot of gaps in our Christian life. Most notably, we don't even know which James is James. Like, there are so many details about our church's history we're just completely oblivious to. And that's not the first time that the church has translated something, because Latin wasn't the original language of the church. Greek wasn't the original language of the church. It was just a spattering of Aramaic. How on earth are we convinced and certain that the faith we proclaim is the same one that the apostles proclaimed 2,000 years ago? The presence of the Spirit of God. Look again at the little picture. You see these little red lines coming out of the center. And then that center has, which kind of looks Eucharistic, but I don't want to make the assumption. The Spirit of God brings the center down to the church, which binds all of the figures together. The Spirit's job is to maintain the unity. And all of us are bound together by our common faith that Christ is risen, and that we encounter him through this breaking of the bread that the apostles celebrate in our midst. I, for one, am absolutely convinced that this mission and mystery is still present among us today. God hasn't abandoned us. And amidst all the confusions and amidst all the difficulties, and no matter how hard it is to hand on the faith, and no matter how hard it is to be able to bind together the church in a fundamental unity, the apostles did what they could do, and then they ultimately died for it. The job and the task is now ours, to do the best we can and to commit the rest of the work to God's Holy Spirit.